From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Throughout this campaign season, we've been glad to welcome candidates for federal, state, and local offices. And when we can, we bring political opponents together. Well, this hour, we sit down with Nate McMurray, the Democrat challenging incumbent Republican Congressman Chris Collins. Mr. Collins declined to join us today. We also invited Reform Party candidate Larry Piegza, who told us he is unavailable this hour. Chris Collins has represented New York's 27th congressional district since his first victory in 2012, and he is running for re-election, despite being under indictment for insider trading. The brief backstory is that 2 years ago, Collins became the largest shareholder in a company called Innate Immunotherapeutics. Federal investigators say that Collins got word that the company's biggest hope for success, a drug trial, had been a flop, and that could tank their stock price. So Collins immediately reached out to his son, who also had significant shares. The information was passed on to other investors close to the Collins family, who used this knowledge to unload a lot of stock and save themselves a big financial hit. Now, Collins has maintained that he is innocent. He says he will prove it, despite the trail of already released evidence by investigators that demonstrates Collins' understanding of the situation. His opponent, Nate McMurray, has tried to rally support across the political spectrum. And this hour, it's a chance to explore the issues just 4 days before the election with Nate McMurray, the Democrat running for Congress, challenging Chris Collins. Thanks for coming back. Really appreciate having you.
I'm happy to be here. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I mean, we were here, what, a few months ago before that indictment of Chris Collins, and things were a little different. So I just want to remind listeners, we really did work very hard with the schedules of all the candidates to try to get them all here. And Mr. McMurray is able to be here. And Chris Collins did, in his campaign, did respond to us yesterday. They said they will let us know when they are ready for an interview. You haven't seen him for a debate, have you?
No, we've been asking for a debate for months and months and months. And I stood up in front of his empty podium the other day in front of St. Joe's Collegiate High School, which is a tradition in that part of the district. Every year they have a forum for candidates. And he didn't show up. He said he was busy or something, and he didn't think it was valuable. And it's not just that. Every single media outlet from here to Buffalo has asked for him to have a debate, and he has refused. He refused to disclose his public schedule. He refuses to tell us where he's going to be. He refuses to have candid and open interviews with the press to the extent possible. He is a stealth or ghost candidate.
Well, listeners, this hour, if you want to weigh in on this race, the McMurray and Collins and Piegza race, I want to be fair to Larry Piegza, who's also on the ballot, you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. This race has become a national story. Chris Collins was the first and most vociferous supporter of Donald Trump in Congress. He remains one of the president's closest allies. I think he's got the support of the White House, though perhaps not necessarily the Justice Department. And so I am curious to hear what you are hearing specifically from Republican voters in this district, Nate.
Sure. I don't think he does have the support of the White House at this point. I'm not sure. Trump's Justice Department is the one who's indicted him.
I think I'm more talking about the president himself, but you're right. The Justice Department.
Well, he's also been removed from every single committee by his own party. So even if he wins, he'll have almost no say in what happens in government. He'll be occupied by his ongoing legal problems, which even if he is, let's assume he is innocent, which is what we do in this country. It's still an all-time-consuming thing for him to deal with that process. In addition to that, he's been removed from every single committee. So he really is a man in limbo. He has no party, he has no allegiances, but he is trying to hold on to his former connections to the president like a drowning man holds on to a life preserver. But I think what I'm hearing from Republicans from across the district is they want the same thing everybody wants. We want a government we can believe in, a government we can trust. They want integrity in government, and they want problem solvers in government. And I think that's what's helping us be so close in the polls. We're having Republicans and conservatives and independents rushing to us right now because they cannot vote for Mr. Collins.
Now, are you encountering Republicans when you go door to door, when you meet people at forums who tell you, I'm not comfortable with the indictment of Chris Collins, but I still don't want Congress in the hands of Democrats. I don't know what to do here. You know, and that's what Jerry Zaremski is reporting in the Buffalo News, that there are still Republicans, people like Freda Sabo, a Republican who said that, you know, I always thought Chris Collins was a pretty good guy. and then dismissed the felony insider trading case as just the kind of scandal that most politicians endure. Are you seeing that too, Republicans sticking by him?
You do see some of that, but what I'm trying to tell people over and over again is I'm not the guy in the commercials. Mr. Collins has run commercial after commercial, not telling us about what he's done, not telling us about his representation, but trying to define me as something that I'm not. I'm an Eagle Scout. I'm a product of this region. He's from a different place. He's from North Carolina. I'm someone who grew up here. I swam in the same lakes. I fished in the same rivers. But if you look at these commercials, it seems like I'm some kind of horrible human being who breaks windows and wants the end of the destruction of the world. It's completely outrageous, his commercials, and the way he has defined me. So this challenge we do have is reaching out to good-hearted people across the region and saying, we are not who he is trying to define me to be by using millions and millions of dollars. We are something else. We are someone who's going to fight for the working people of this region. And whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, I will be your representative.
Now, he did, just referencing the ads, and by the way, our phones are lit up. So we'll get to calls early this hour, earlier than normal, because I know a lot of people want to talk to Nate McMurray and would have liked to have Chris Collins here as well. One of the ads I think you're referring to was, I think I could say objectively it was a racist ad. It was an ad that very darkly showed you speaking Korean, because you speak Korean. In fact, you lived there in Seoul, right, and taught there. And I think the implication was that you were some sort of foreign agent who's more interested in bringing jobs overseas than here. What did you make of the ad?
I think the ad was xenophobic and bigoted, and I think that's widely how it's been seen by the public. I was standing in front of St. Joe's the other day, again, in front of that debate we had where he failed to show up. And I said to the students there, many of whom are studying Mandarin, I said, you know, I heard you have a Mandarin teacher here. And she stood up and I said hello to her in Mandarin. And I said, you should all be proud of your interest in learning about the world and learning foreign languages. And they erupted in cheers, not only for the fact that we are a country that cherishes learning and education, but also in support of their teacher. I think that Mr. Collins, he really, that ad backfired. It painted him as someone who is bigoted and someone who will stoop to incredible lows to win. But more than just that ad, the other ads that you show me as a supporter of open borders or show me as someone who's against the Second Amendment, those ads make me angry. And we're doing our best to meet with every single person and to look them in the eyes and tell them, I'm someone who will respect your rights, I'm someone who will respect your beliefs, and I'm someone who will fight for you. And I think it's going to work. I think that the good-natured people of this region are going to stand up, and they're going to stand up to lies and anger and hatred.
Well, I mean, the Collins campaign, and I don't want to speak for them. Again, they were invited today. But they might say, look, these issues are relevant. Look at – it's hard to talk about this without, I think – being as direct as I can be as a journalist, but some of the hysteria about this caravan that's coming to the American southern border. I mean, the president is sending thousands of troops, and he has said, if we catch these people coming into the country, they're not going to be released. He has said that that if there is anyone throwing rocks, that the American soldiers could be ordered to fire on them, as if this is like a horde of barbarians coming our way. So do you support putting troops on the southern border?
I support keeping our borders safe and protecting our borders, but I also support being rational and responsible. And I think if you would listen to some of this rhetoric, you'd think we are under an imminent invasion of some sort. But then good-minded and smart people, like I heard Fox News just yesterday, Fox News itself, by the way, stood up and said, you know, this is not an imminent threat. Shepard Smith said, this is not an imminent threat, that this is being used against you. And I should note, by the way, speaking of Fox News and Rupert Murdoch, that even the conservative New York Post itself, I am the only Democrat endorsed by that newspaper, which is almost unheard of. And I'm endorsed by that conservative paper because they are telling you, do not be afraid of Nate McMurray. Be afraid of Mr. Collins.
What would you do then about the caravan, if anything?
I think we need to keep our borders secure. Now, which just doesn't seem to be the case whatsoever, according to Shepard Smith, it's months away from even reaching anywhere near the border. But yes, if someone's trying to invade through our border, you would put troops on the border. But that doesn't seem to be the case whatsoever. I think we take responsible measures to keep our borders safe, just like we do here on the Canadian border or any other border. And any responsible, reasonable politician will say the same thing. But I do think stirring up these fears, that right now, the number one issue I heard that's important to many voters is immigration.
They're telling you that's number one.
Well, that's what I heard in a poll the other day.
Oh, okay.
But if I see across my region, the NY27, The issue here is kitchen table economics. And that's what I'm going to be focusing on. Kitchen table economics. How are we going to give people health care? How are we going to make people sure they have a future and a job and they can have their share of the American dream? And that's what I care about.
All right. Let me get some phone calls. We've got a lot to work through with Nate McMurray. Let's see here. Lisa in Rochester. First up. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi. You know, moments like this, I think just my mind is going blank and words are failing me because I cannot possibly understand how anybody could support Chris Collins. And is this really a tight race? I mean, the man's a criminal.
It is. According to all the polling that we've seen, it is tight. Yes. It's pretty close. Most polling recently within the margin of error that I have seen.
I'll jump in here. It's neck and neck. And it's neck and neck because, you know, the power of media today and the power of Mr. Collins to pound the media with these negative, terrible ads and the power of fear. Now, I have to hope that those better American values of hope, of justice, of responsibility and accountability will weigh out. And I think they will. If you drive across the region, you see tons of signs. You see tons of support. You see people standing on corners. And that's really not about me. That's about something much bigger than me. The people saying we are not going to be exploited by men like Chris Collins. And I'm hopeful that democracy will win out. But it's only going to win out if people like you go to the polls and get your friends to go to the polls. Because that's how it works. It's going to be that tight. And we need to fight for every last vote.
You want to add to that, Lisa?
Well, I mean, yes, everybody I know is not going to be voting for Collins. I just, the fact that he can even be running, that people can actually consider voting for him. I think Martha Stewart went to prison for what he's done. And we have criminals in the Republican Party. I'm sorry. This is unbelievable to me. When I wake up in the morning, I feel sometimes like I'm dreaming this whole thing. It's just unbelievable.
Well, Lisa, I appreciate the phone call. I want to pivot off Lisa's call and ask you a question then. You've met thousands of voters now in this campaign. You meet a lot of lifelong Republicans. You respect people who are lifelong Republicans?
Absolutely. There's a group that started called Republicans and Independents for Nate McMurray. And there's a steering committee in every single county. And you may have seen my most recent commercial. We have a former Republican town supervisor in the commercial and other Republicans from across this district, people who voted for Chris Collins, who are saying we cannot vote for him again. Let me say this too. We all know this region. You know, this region went through some tough times. From Lackawanna to Lockport, we lost a lot of jobs. And let's be honest, it hurts a little bit when I say this, but four Super Bowls didn't help either. But it is going to do massive damage to our reputation as a region if we elect someone who is so disrespected by his peers that he's been removed by his own party from his committees. He has been removed and he has been ashamed. If we elect him, it'll be a black eye. And I think the people of this region, now we're starting to feel that pride come back to Western New York. We're feeling that strength come back. There's people moving back here. I think, and I am confident, that the good people of this region will stand up and say no to this type of man. And I think you'll see a great turnout on November 6th.
Well, then let me just add this then. You respect people who are lifelong Republicans. You respect the difference in maybe opinions on policy, but you don't demonize them. People can agree to disagree on a lot of different issues. And if they were to say to you, look, I've read the indictment. And by the way, in this country, you're right, innocent until proven guilty. But the public can read evidence as we see it. And there's a lot of ham-fisted, pretty obvious insider training that happened. And let's say a lifelong Republican said to you, look, I've read the indictment. The guy did some terrible things. My concern is I elect you. It's close. Democrats take back the House. I want Republicans to have the House. Chris Collins can get elected. And then even if he is convicted, he goes away. Somebody else comes in from the Republican Party. You get elected. My party suffers. I need to vote for Chris Collins, even though I've got to hold my nose to do it. Is that a respectable position?
I do not think so. Because number one, he's not going to be able to even be there. I mean, he's not going to be a part-time congressman. He's going to be a no-time congressman. Now, I'm an attorney. Now, any attorney, anyone who's even been near a boardroom understands the rules of insider trading. To do what he did is completely unacceptable. And again, there's video evidence of him doing it on the White House lawn. So he is going to have to defend himself, and he has delayed his trial date until 2020. So conceivably, for the entire length of his term in office, he is going to be in he's going to be in a court. And beyond that, he has said publicly that he is doing this at the advice of his lawyers. not to fight for the party. The party has removed him from his positions, but to fight for his lawyers. Now, let's switch to me for a second. Am I going to betray some Republican voters of this district? Now, I am like everybody else in the world. I have beliefs on both sides. And like every other family in this district, we have Democrats and Republicans that we have dinner with every night. People who have different beliefs. Nobody is, it's not a binary thing. We all know we're not one thing or the other. We're a little bit of both. And depending on the issue, we have ideas on both sides of the aisle. I think that our current leadership on both sides has failed us. I think Nancy Pelosi has failed us. Now, you can think she's a great leader all you want, but I think she's a polarizing leader, and it's time for her to move on. I think we need to find leadership on both sides who's willing to say, how can we work together? There is more common ground than there is things that make us hate each other. We're not warring camps. We are Americans, first and foremost. And when I go to D.C., I'm going as an American. I'm not going there to destroy the president. I'm not going there to make Nancy Pelosi more powerful. I'm going there to represent the people of this district, and that's what I will do.
Who is a Democrat that does inspire you?
Well, I think you have to go back in time a bit. I think you have to go back to people like Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy's a Democrat who traveled across this region from Batavia to Buffalo. And people stood up on cars, they stood up on the top of buildings, and they got excited, and they clapped, and they cheered, because Bobby Kennedy, even though he's a man who came from great wealth, and his own brother was the president, he was speaking about kitchen table economics. How do we make things fairer? How do we fight for people who have been forgotten and lost in this country? And I think that's a powerful message. And I think that Democratic Party, the Democratic Party of my father, a man who wore a Union jacket with pride and said, I'm a Democrat with pride, that's the party I want, and that's the party I'll try to bring back to Washington.
Before I get back to the phone calls, a different Lisa, please hang there. David in York, stay there. Just on the subject of kitchen table economics, this may be narrative, but I want to ask you. The Democratic Party in Bobby Kennedy's era was more considered, broadly speaking, the party of the worker, more union support, more sort of blue-collar worker support. We saw the president, the current president, win union voters in Ohio, unheard of a generation ago. We have seen workers in many cases question your party, the Democratic Party. Why has that happened?
Well, I question my party. I'm angry at my party. I'm angry that they lost people like my family and people across this region. They were not focused on those people. They can say they were all they want, but we know they weren't. Now, people will call me and say, well, what about this? What about that? Well, we all know that there was a time when the former head of the Democratic Party himself said, well, those voters don't have anywhere else to go. We found out the hard way in 2016, they do have somewhere else to go. And we need to learn a lesson from that election. And the lesson is we need to fight for people, for regular people, middle-class people, workers, unions, people who are out there every day trying to make ends meet. And that's what's going to be my focus, and I'm going to try to bring that focus back to the party.
Well, your opponent, this president, the Republican Party, said they did that with their tax cut this year.
Well, if you look at the details, we know the reality of that. And if you talk to the people of this region, Mr. Collins on that alone should not be reelected. He betrayed the workers of New York State. He has effectively raised the taxes of every single person in New York State. And we've been hearing about deficits our entire life. He did not create a deficit. By their own admission, they created a deficit of $1.5 trillion. That's what the tax cut did. And it wasn't for some infrastructure project to help NY27. It wasn't to go to Mars or cure cancer. It was to give more money to people like Mr. Collins. It was to give more money to him so he could buy another house in Florida or whatever else he wants to do with the money. It wasn't to help people here. It wasn't to help average Americans. I believe in cutting taxes on people, on the middle class, on small businesses. I do not believe on giving mass tax cuts to people like Chris Collins and his friends. And I do not believe in raising taxes on New Yorkers so we have to pay for the rest of the union.
Someone in your district making $45,000 a year, making $38,000 a year. Chris Collins says they got a little chunk back, anywhere from $500 to $1,500. That matters to them.
It's like giving away the crackers and giving the soup away to somebody else. It is a small amount. It does matter, but it's a small amount, and there's sunset provisions in that law.
That's true.
That go away. But the other cuts for everybody else stay forever.
That's true. The cuts for the highest earners are permanent.
So it was a way to sweeten the deal to make you know, the devil's in the details on this stuff. And it was a way to sweeten the deal. And then next year, Salt in 2019 is going to sting. What I mean by that is state and local taxes, the deductions are different now. You are going to be penalized for being a New Yorker. Now, how can a man, and this goes for Tom Reed as well, how can a representative of this region vote to raise taxes on their own people for the benefit of out-of-staters? We are now a giver state while these other states are taker states. We are losing population in this state increasingly, and they exacerbated the problem, and they should be held accountable.
Okay, so one more question then before we jump back on the phones. You go to Washington. Are you going to vote to rescind that entire tax plan?
Yes, I am. We're going to work to fight, but they're clawed back, and we're going to figure out a new plan to help working people and make those tax cuts permanent, not these little giveaways for a short time. We can make some permanent tax cuts in small businesses and working people.
Nate McMurray is the Democrat running against Chris Collins, the Republican incumbent in the 27th District, and they were invited to come on this program together. Chris Collins declined. Nate McMurray is here. Online where for those to learn more about you, Nate? We ask all candidates to come on the program.
VoteMcMurray.com. Vote, and you go to Facebook and Twitter. We have a growing and expanding following. I'll say this to you as well, sir. Thank you for not allowing Mr. Collins to veto our free speech rights, which is what he's done for this entire election season. By not agreeing to show up or saying maybe we'll talk to you later, just like he did to you, he effectively vetoed free speech and limited the ability of the citizens to learn about who I really am and who he really is. He should be here right now looking me in the eyes. If he has the guts to make those awful ads about me, he should have the guts to look across me and look me in the eyes and say that stuff to my face.
All right, back to the phones we go. Lisa, different Lisa from earlier. This is Lisa in Rochester. Go ahead.
Yep, I'm moving to Rochester, but right now I'm living in Oneonta, which is New York 19, and I'm sorry that Mr. McMurray has been the victim of Republican xenophobia ads. In my district, Delgado is the victim of Republican Fazio's racist ads. And what this has done for me is reminded me that, you know, my parents had to wake up. They were both born in 1918. Dad fought in the Battle of Leyte Gulf. Mom fought the Nazis on the home front because she had to keep the train loads of long-range artillery moving because, as Mom said, Lisa, not everyone was for us beating Hitler. And, you know, I think we've forgotten that. We have seen the racist, misogynistic underbelly of this country laid bare by the dog whistles, direct and indirect, of Donald Trump and his ilk. And I think that one mistake that I don't want to see these wonderful young Democrats making is make new friends but keep the old. And we have to remember that Nancy Pelosi's many years in Congress means that she has the power to be on certain committees. So I would rather see the Democrats dial back some of the populist rhetoric. It's not needed. Focus on the fact that they're racist and that they're lying and that they're willing to lock up children who are brown. Focus on that. And I wish the Green Party candidates would withdraw from all the races. We've got a Green Party candidate who's probably going to make it so that Sasa will be able to steal the vote. And that's what the Republicans have been doing for decades, is stealing the vote. My mother saw this in Michigan in the 60s. I'm going to shut up now and let you talk, but I do hope that we can remember that we don't have to be civil to people who want to kill us, okay? Really, and that's what this is about. These people want to eliminate Medicare, eliminate Social Security, and they're lying about it. I have heard people in my district say, well, that Nancy Pelosi wants to take away my Medicare. And I said, no, she doesn't. So remember that Andrew Cuomo's our friend, too, folks.
All right, so Lisa, thank you for the phone call. Go ahead, Nate.
Well, there's a lot in that phone call. Well, the biggest thing I took from it is you need to speak bravely when you see something that's wrong. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. And there's a lot that's wrong right now. We need to stand up and say this is unacceptable. Having a man that is indicted, that is a flight risk, who has lost his passport and his right to bear arms running is unacceptable.
Risk?
Yes, he's been declared a flight risk by the court. Did you know that? He's actually been declared a flight risk.
Do you think he is a flight risk?
Absolutely. With all the money he has, he knows he cannot beat this rap. He knows it. And that's why he's running. His lawyers told him, look, you have no options. You can't run
Respectfully,
away.
Respectfully, Nate, yeah. Mr. McMurray, people with money and status and power beat raps like this all the time in this country.
Great point. But it's going to be a heck of a challenge.
Okay.
I mean, anyone who looks...
The evidence is really compelling.
Yeah, and what he's going to need... And so, I mean, I'm not the one who declared him a flight risk. The court declared him a flight risk. He lost his passport. So having a man like that run so shamelessly and say, it doesn't matter, I'm going to win anyway, and have him exploit his position in that way, it's unacceptable. So there's a lot of things we need to stand up to. Can I go back to Nancy Pelosi for a second?
Yeah.
Look, I understand why the caller respects Nancy Pelosi. I view it differently. We are at a time of polarization. We are at a time where Ms. Pelosi represents a lot of things, rightly or wrongly, to a lot of people. And if we really want to bring new leadership and new ideas to the forefront, I think it's time for Ms. Pelosi to move on. There's going to come a time for me to move on. All politicians have a shelf life. And if it's hurting the things you care about to remain in power, I would hope she would have the courage to say, it's time for me to go, and I'm not going to vote for her.
All right, so in other words, she has become a lightning rod, whether it's fair or not, and what you're saying is that can't be changed. She is what she is right now.
Yes, and she's been in office for a long time, and I think if you have this new wave of new leadership come in, it's an opportunity for us to restore and redeem the party in a different way and to find ways to work together across the aisle and stop this polarizing rhetoric.
David in York next on the phone with Nate McMurray. Go ahead, David.
Hi, Nate. Thanks for coming on the program, and full disclosure, I will vote for you. My concern is that how you're going to translate the good things you have to say into actual action. And I'll refer to your tweet after the synagogue massacre, which, in my opinion, didn't have the strength that I would have liked, because on your website, you talk about reasonable gun control, yet in your tweet, you never mentioned guns. The other thing that worried me was that you never mentioned actually the word Jew or Jewish and lumped together anti-Semitism and racism, which I think is unfortunate because I think the African-American experience and the Jewish experience are unique and need to be understood for what they are. So I do have the question is, when will you speak out about guns and your beliefs about them and in a more in-depth way about bigotry?
Okay. David, thank you. Go ahead.
David, and thank you for your vote, first of all. And just after that tweet, I do think I specifically said, I said that this was against the Jewish people. And I mean, you can only write so much in a single tweet. And I do agree that obviously the experience of African Americans in this country and the Jewish people in this country is quite different. So when will I speak out on racism? I think I have consistently throughout my campaign and throughout my time in office. I've stood up against bigotry and racism every time that I had the opportunity to do so, and I will continue to do so strongly. And I have said publicly, even in a district where a lot of people voted for President Trump, that I think some of his rhetoric is wrong, and he is doing things that he is pandering to beliefs in this system. I just heard Dave Chappelle say very eloquently, actually. He said that that Mr. Trump is not bringing these ideas out. He's the first one to ride the wave of these ideas, or at least draw power or heat from these ideas. And I think as the president, I can't read what's in his heart. I do not know the man. But I think as the president of the United States, a country with such a divisive history, he has an affirmative duty to stand up more strongly and say, we cannot accept this. There's not good people on both sides. This is a movement that is not part of America, that is un-American, that we must fight back against. Beyond that, I think the other thing you asked me about guns. I am a supporter of the Second Amendment, fully support the Second Amendment. And I'm someone who grew up, again, as an Eagle Scout. I have a lot of friends who are outdoorsmen. I'm someone who's enjoyed going to the range myself. But I am not on one side that believes we need to erode or destroy the Second Amendment. And I'm not on the side of the NRA either, who wants no changes whatsoever, no matter how disastrous the situation is, no matter how horrible the crime that's committed. We have to take reasonable and sensible steps towards gun control. And for me, that means first and foremost, universal background checks to make sure that the good guys have the guns. And I think if we're not willing to have the courage to say that, given all that we've seen, all that we go through, then we are going to continue to be the victims of these horrible, horrible people and have these horrible, horrible crimes committed. So that's where I stand, sir. And I look forward to working with my fellow members of Congress to take the reasonable steps.
Okay. The so-called assault weapons, which I know irks not just the NRA, but a lot of gun owners, but that term, let me just say semi-automatics. Any ban that you would favor on semi-automatics?
Well, you have to be careful for the very reason you just described. The problem with the SAFE Act itself, it was a knee-jerk legislation that was passed literally in the middle of the night. And when you do that, when you play around with rights, just like with any other rights, you have to be very careful about how you pass this legislation. And you have to speak to all stakeholders. And you have to try to understand all stakeholders. One of the callers earlier talked about the fact that we need to speak boldly. We don't need civility. We need civility. We absolutely need civility. And if you look at our history, look at the leadership of someone like Martin Luther King, who faced the most ugly, the most brutal type of oppression and hatred. And he changed the world with civility and strength of character. And even though it's not easy, and then the more natural or instinction or the instinct is to be angry and to be violent, that's not who we need to be. We need to stand up for what we believe, but we need to do it in a way that shows great integrity and dignity and also civility.
All right, Renee in Canandaigua is next with Nate McMurray. Go ahead, Renee.
Hi, Nate. I'll start as well by saying you've absolutely earned my vote, and I'm excited to vote for you on Tuesday, and I'm really proud of the campaign you've been running. My original question was about Nancy Pelosi, and I do think you've addressed it, but I do want to caution you. Democratic women are incredibly reactive to hearing, especially from men in our own party, telling this woman, a lion of Congress, the first woman Speaker of the House who shepherded ACA across the finish line, that she needs to pack it up and go home and just leave, just stay away. It's insulting to her legacy and what she's accomplished. And I just encourage you to talk about her in more measured terms. So my real question then, since you've really already covered that ground, was to talk about a poll that I saw publicized today that was Channel 10 and Dixie Strategies that was released that said that in our district, in the 27th, by more than a 2-to-1 margin, non-white voters are picking Collins over you. I was so shocked to see that, and I wanted to hear what your reaction was to that and how you plan when you win to reach out to this population of residents and voters and build a coalition with them. Thanks for taking my question.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I think the first, I'll move on to the non-white voters thing. These polls, there's not a lot I can say. There's polls all over the place right now. There's polls that show that we're up or he's up. But if you take the polls on average, we're neck and neck, is what I talked about earlier. We need to have every voter come out. We're going to have a very unfortunate result. But as to non-white voters, I don't know. I can only speculate. Again, I don't have the polling data. I don't know who did this poll in particular. There's many polls going on. I do know that when we're out knocking doors, we seem to have a ton of support from across the political spectrum and across the spectrum of people who live in our region. And I will work hard to represent every single one of them.
Lori and Victor, and then what we'll do is we'll take our only break of the hour, and we're going to hit as many issues as we can with Nate McMurray before the end of the hour. He's the Democrat running in the 27th Congressional District. Chris Collins, the Republican incumbent, declined our repeated invitations. Here's Lori and Victor. Go ahead.
Hi, Nate, this is Lori Allen, and I want you to know that you will have both my husband's and my vote. We live in that little tiny part of the district that was gerrymandered to be one of the most ruby red districts in New York State. My comment is, as I have watched you run your campaign, what has impressed me most is that you understand that this democracy is founded on the rule of law, not on monarchs, not on tyrants. Chris Collins, to remind everybody, was the first Republican in Congress to come out in support of Donald Trump and his candidacy for president. So I would just like you to speak, if you would, a little bit more on where you see our current country and the rule of law, which has served us so well for over 200 years.
Okay. Thank you, Lori. Go ahead, Nate.
Well, I was a Fulbright scholar. I studied constitutional law overseas, and I know how other countries look to our country and the example we have set for separation of powers, for fighting against things like nepotism, like the rule of law itself, that no man is above the law. And I think that message has to come across by the voters of this district. I've done everything I could. I have knocked every door I could. I've talked to every person I could. I've gone to every town. I have worn my shoes out. I've lost 35 pounds, Evan. I don't know if you noticed. I was a little thinner since the last time I was here.
Your coat looks big.
Yeah, this used to be a fitted suit. I'm doing everything I can. But the only way the rule of law is sustained, and the only way our democracy is sustained, is if voters vote and fight for what you believe in. And we have an opportunity to show Mr. Collins on November 6th that he is not above the law, that no man is above the law. And the only way you can do that is if we have every person possible out there voting. So I appreciate your support greatly. I promise I will not let you down, but we need to finish this together.
Tom writes and says, I think Nate is probably right that electing Chris Collins would be a black eye for the region. Maybe not four lost Super Bowls bad, but at least Music City Miracle bad. But Trump won this district by 24.5 points. Don't voters in the region, rather than looking silly for continuing to support a criminal, actually deserve some credit for keeping such an open mind that they're making this a close race?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm proud of every single voter from across the spectrum who's on our side. That's a great point. Was that Tom?
Tom,
absolutely a great point. And I think the good thing about our democracy, it doesn't always allow you to get the answer right, but it allows you to correct the answer sometimes. And beyond that, Mr. Trump is not Chris Collins. Mr. Trump, whether you like him or not, President Trump has a lot of charisma, a lot of talents. He's a heck of a salesman. He's maybe the best salesman we've ever seen. Doesn't mean I like him or agree with him on every point, but he is a talented person in many ways. And I think even if you begrudgingly have to say that, I think you can say that. Mr. Collins is not that person. Mr. Collins does not have that type of support. And Mr. Collins has never even given lip service to the working men of our region. He has discredited them and embarrassed them time and time again. And if you talk to people who worked for him, worked for his companies, or the companies he's closed here, you know, he sent jobs. He's complained about me sending jobs overseas. I never send one job overseas. This is a man who has multiple factories overseas. This is a man who shuttered some of the most storied companies in our region. This is a vulture capitalist who's taking advantage of the workers of our region, who bragged about it. And I think you will see the people of this region stand up against him.
All right, Rob Engineer, I lied. I'm going to take one more call before the break. Poor Rob, dealing with me every day. Tess in Jamestown. Go ahead, Tess.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Nate, I live in New York 23, so I'm sorry I can't vote for you, but I work a lot in New York 27, so I see your signs and I see your ads on TV. I have this question for you. I'm a transgender woman, and you're dealing with an opposing party in the GOP who right now has two major pushes, one trying to legally define and define them out of existence and make sure they can't access secure housing and secure employment, and they think that's right. I'm at a loss for how to be civil with people like that.
Tess, I want to thank you for the call. And what I want to do with the candidate, Nate McMurray, is ask you two questions on that. First of all, do you oppose the Trump administration's recent push to define define sex, gender, biology as unchangeable, all the same, that there's no such thing as a person who has male biology and is a female, et cetera. Essentially to say transgender doesn't exist. Do you support the Trump administration's push for that?
Absolutely not. I think that, Tess, I understand your fear and I understand your anger. And I think what they're doing is not only against our common decency and common values, but against science itself. And I think we need to fight against it. Now, when I say be civil, I don't mean bend for them. I mean fight it, but fight it in a way that is more powerful, where you're unwavering, you're like granite, and that's what we need to be. I think the screaming, I think the yelling, I think some of that, I think it hurts against us. I think you can persuade people. I think you can get people on our side, and if you do that in a dignified way, in a way that is unbending and unshakable, I think we will win. And I promise you, as your representative, not your representative, I'm an NY27, but you're an NY23, but as a representative of the people of this nation, I will stand up for the human rights and dignity of every single American, and that includes transgender Americans.
Short break. Nate McMurray for the rest of the hour, the Democratic candidate running against Republican incumbent Chris Collins in NY27. We're right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, Wilma Wright wants to bring Tesla to Rochester, but there are questions about what the law and the rules say. What is allowed, and should we expect to see Tesla coming here? We explore it in our first hour. Second hour, young voters, or young people who don't vote. We'll talk to those who do plan to show up and vote on Tuesday, and those who don't. Join the conversation on Monday. My guest is the town supervisor of Grand Island. Still, right?
Yes.
Hard to do, run for office and do it.
It's got a lot of balls in the air here. So yeah.
Yeah. The town supervisor of Grand Island, Democrat Nate McMurray, who's challenging Republican incumbent Congressman Chris Collins, who declined our multiple invitations to come on this program before the election. And let's talk about some of the issues. And here's a note from a listener on Twitter who says, Can you ask Nate if he can not upset the liberals who are busting their asses for him right now? So I think what they're hearing is, you know, you're reaching across the aisle, and I understand it. You're telling Republican voters, I get why you may feel certain ways. We have more in common than you think. But for liberals who are hearing you today, where do you feel more aligned with them? What are the issues you point to and say, this is where the party needs to go, this is where the country needs to go?
Well, I just said one of those issues, and I think that's transgender rights. I'll fight for people, all Americans, and I'm proud to be endorsed by the Stonewall Democrats in Erie County. And if you feel I am not listening to you, I am. But I'm someone who is someone who will listen to both sides and try to find common ground and work together. And I think we need more of that in America. I don't like the labels. Sometimes people say, are you a progressive? Are you a liberal? Are you a conservative? Well, it depends who's looking at me. I mean, in the primary process, I was, they called me a corporate. I was William F. Buckley. And then suddenly, when I got through the primary process, I was Che Guevara to the other side. So I think these labels and the way we define each other, it doesn't really help us solve problems. What I am is a middle-class American, and I will fight for middle-class values. And I think that includes common decency, and I think it includes respect for all people. And that's what I'm going to bring to Washington.
What healthcare system does that include?
It's going to include a system that covers every single American. And I think that when you look at Medicare, I think a Medicare for all system is the way to go. And it's something I'm going to fight for. And if you look at my beliefs or my values, I haven't changed. Since the beginning of this campaign to now, I am consistent on where I am. And I think one of those ways I've been consistent, even when I was attacked for it, is a belief that every single American should have health care.
From the left of many sort of centrist Democrats, writers have criticized the Democratic Party for the last 40 years for abandoning the protection of workers by allowing economic concentration, not fighting mergers, allowing sort of middle-sized towns that had factories and manufacturing hubs to sort of wear out and decline as corporate and concentrated economic power got stronger and stronger. Do you agree with that critique?
I do. I think I also agree with the critique of unfettered free trade. I think that free trade is a net benefit to society. Trade is good. Just like if you had a boutique on the corner here, you'd want to sell to the most customers possible. Same way you want to sell to customers in China. That's a big market. Or India. You want to sell to these customers. But we have to have trade deals that make sense. And we have to leverage the power of the United States. And I think when you focus on those kitchen table economics, you can fight for so many other things. If you use that as your anchor. Now, a lot of people listening may not know my story. I am an attorney. I have been involved in business development. I know the value of a dollar. I have, as a town supervisor, I've had very great success keeping a budget tight and increasing our credit rating, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm also a guy who grew up one of seven. My dad was in the painters union. He died when he was 39 years old. My mom was 35 years old, and she raised all seven children by herself. And I understand the challenges of working families in America to make ends meet. And I'm proud to be someone who's going to be able to understand that and represent those people and use that as my compass in Washington.
What can Washington do to raise wages? What we've seen, even with the unemployment rate dropping, and that is a statistic, whether it was during the Obama administration, now during the Trump administration, that's always a little fuzzy because it doesn't always include people who aren't even looking for work. So right now, the Trump administration is touting 3.7% unemployment, close to full employment, et cetera, et cetera. Wage growth has been essentially non-existent until the last couple of years of the Obama administration and a little bit now. It's a little bit of wage growth, but it's pretty stagnant. And certainly workers at the bottom, at the middle, haven't seen wage growth as workers at the top. What can Washington do to specifically change that?
Well, I think you're right. I think if you look at these numbers, you'd think everybody in America is doing great and eating roast beef every night and everything's, you know, great. But it's not. And for a lot of people, they continue to be left behind. And our buying power, not just our wages, but our overall buying power continues to decrease. And our wages continue to decrease. I think the way you do that, first and foremost, you have to create the elements of a strong economy. And to some extent, that means helping small business grow. And you have to find ways to help small business grow. But you also have to encourage big business to invest. And I think some of the steps and some of the things we've considered in Washington in recent years are effective. What's not effective is having a tax code that allows the most elite among us to have the most benefits and the most gains, and the weakest among us to often bear the most risks and the most burden. So I think we have to look at our tax code. I think we also have to start to invest in big projects in America again, like infrastructure. We're a country that used to lead the world in infrastructure. But here in NY27, our average bridge is rated a D. Now, I just came from Clarence High School, where I spoke to the public affairs class. After a D comes an F, a failure. That means the bridge falls down. So we have to invest in our society, and that investment will also produce better wages and better jobs.
I want to ask you what some of the email feedback we've had, which is that some of our listeners are saying that it would be an embarrassment to the district if Chris Collins wins. I know you've talked to voters, and I'm sure you've talked to some voters who still tell you they're going to vote for Chris Collins, and the polls are close. Is that a bridge too far, or do you think the district should be embarrassed if he wins and he's under indictment?
It would be an embarrassment. I have to say boldly, it would be an embarrassment. And it's sad for me to say that. I love this place more than any place in the whole world. And it's keeping me up at night thinking about a glib and unrepentant Chris Collins winning this race. And I've done everything in my power to make sure that doesn't happen. And if you're out there writing that email, let me tell you what you can do. You can get on the phones. You can knock doors. We need people knocking doors this weekend. We need to, listen, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, I'm a guy, I never stole a stick of gum in my life, Evan. I am someone who's tried to live, I'm not perfect, but I've tried to live a decent life, and I'm not going to disappoint the people of this region. He's laughing at us. He is laughing at us because he thinks he can use these enrollment numbers and he can use this partisanship that we've been talking about, this Republican-Democrat divide, to coast into office without ever having a debate, without ever seeing me and facing me in public by buying millions of dollars in ads. And we need to prove, this is our opportunity to stand up. And everyone listening who wants to prove, you need to stand up now and prove that America still works and you can't buy an election.
I suspect you didn't think 4 or 6 months ago that this would be a national story and that you'd have people canvassing who have come from out of the district, out of state. I mean, it's been sort of a weird couple of days from what I've seen. Who did you have?
Well, yeah, it's been weird. I mean, this last night, Talia Shire of Rocky, Adrian from Rocky, showed up at our offices and says she wants to spend the weekend knocking doors with us. And it was amazing. I mean, I kind of have compared this race to Rocky itself. We're underdogs who no one thought we had a chance. We went from pretender to contender. And to have the actual Adrian come to your office, it was heartwarming, and she's a wonderful person. And Luke Skywalker, of all people, Mark Hamill, tweeted out his endorsement to me. So it is a very almost overwhelming experience to have all this local support and then to see this national support come in. But it's not going to matter at all if we don't win. We need to finish this. I do believe, though, Evan, I was here before and I told you then I was going to win. And I could feel that people were already angry at Mr. Collins. They were angry at where our country was going. And people forget. Before the indictment, Mr. Collins had a 6-0 Office of Congressional Ethics holding against him, saying that he had likely broken the law and broken congressional ethics standards for a whole different set of reasons, completely unrelated to insider trading. So this is a man with a history of wrongdoing. And I think that no matter what, it was going to be close. I always believed we can win, and I still believe we can win.
Well, and I want to close with a question that is not intended as a softball, but actually a very serious question on behalf of voters across this district. Nobody is going to sit here and tell me and tell the listeners of this program, I'm going to be corrupt. I mean, you're not going to say, no one's ever going to say that. But with the Chris Collins story, with Eric Massa, with Chris Lee, with the history in this region, there is a cynicism that is really toxic that people have about politics. It is unhealthy for people to feel so flippant that they cannot trust lawmakers, they can't trust the people elected to Congress. And I'm going back to Jerry Zaremski's piece in the Buffalo News, in which 86-year-old Freda Sabo said, I always thought Chris Collins was a pretty good guy, and said that this scandal is just the kind of scandal that many politicians do anyway. If you go to Congress, do you realize the damage you would do to this region if you had a scandal yourself? I mean, it would be massive.
There's not going to be any scandal. We are going to do what's right. And as fact, but back when we had no money in the bank, and I barely had money to pay my staff, I only had a couple staff members, and we were broke, and I was, paying out of my own pocket, driving my own car. To it was bleak. And not a lot of people wanted to see us, and there was a lot of negativity, and people were pointing their fingers and kind of laughing, including Mr. Collins. He laughed at my face and called me a nobody, called me a dog catcher. And I'm going to Congress to fight for the nobodies and the dog catchers, and I'm going to do that the right way. And when people, when big corporations were coming to me, Evan, and saying, we want to give you this money or we want to give you that money, I said no. And I am proud to have said no to those big corporate bank accounts. We did this. Our average contribution is $70. People have sent us change. People have sent us quarters. And look, I am someone who feels that burden and responsibility greatly. And I will take that this honor, if I am elected, I will take this honor very seriously, and I will never let the people of this region down.
Nate McMurray is the Democrat running for Congress on Tuesday's ballot in NY27. We invited the Reform Party candidate, Larry Piegza. He was unavailable. We have invited on many occasions Representative Chris Collins, who has thus far declined all of them. We will continue to reach out. Nate, I know it is a busy season for you, for your opponents, for everyone. Thanks for making the time, and I know we'll talk again.
You do an excellent job, Evan. Thank you for having me.
Nate McMurray, running for Congress. And listeners, once again, WXXINews.org/connections for a catalog of interviews. Candidates running for prominent federal, state, and local offices. There you have it. Get informed beyond just a soundbite or a political ad. Rob Braden is the engineer who is so patient with me. Thank you, Rob. And Megan Mack is the producer who's really the brains and the talent behind everything that this program is. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.